These are the audio tapes follow up the book of the Brohammer model, which many of you bought and many of you thought was one of the best things we'd ever done, but very few of you asked any questions. Dick Schmidt, as the editor of the book, feels that it was his succinct editing. Brohammer, of course, thinks it's his superlative writing. I have no claims whatsoever. But the fact remains that very few of you asked any questions in writing about the Brohammer model. However, a number of you have contacted the individual members of PERCO across the country, and we have a cross-section of the charter membership right here, ranging from the East Coast, which is, of course, the Reverend Bert Main, from as far east as you can get, New York, upstate, and from Washington, Virginia Butler, and from Asia, where he's been touring with the magic show, Michael Pozzola, and of course from Oklahoma, Jim the Hat Bradshaw, Robert Cochran from Chicago, Richard Schmidt from Van Nuys, Bob Purdy from just returned from the bank, and Glenn Schmock from Southern California. That takes care of the group in this room. We're expecting perhaps Richard Quigley to come in from Florida and join this group. If he doesn't, we'll perhaps add his comments as an adjunct to these tapes. As you recall, the Brohammer model was divided into two sections, or rather, perhaps three. We started by enumerating the variables and the ones that were viable. The ones being the viable ones in phase three are factor W, early and sustained pace, primarily. In ultrascan, the vanilla ultrascan, it would be the ultra invariant reading, the early late, and the percentage early. So in one model for phase three, as it stands now, you have three factors to analyze, and in ultrascan, as many as five. We're going to discuss first the viable variables so you remember what you're modeling. You're modeling factor W, which is the most viable of variables, and early and late, depending on what's winning at your track in a win model and what's placing at your track in a place model. Now, in giving us some sense of their inability to use the model correctly, people say, yeah, but I bet my top two choices, but sometimes my third and fourth win. Well, we're going to run the ball around on that one pretty soon, but the idea is, as we have told you in all of our manuals, you narrow it down to five and then take the top four factor W in phase three of those five and then take the two which best represent the win model. I'll ask Bob Cochran to start the ball rolling and comment on that, because he's had a lot of people saying, yeah, but my third choice often wins.
Well, the thing that I find most common with people that call me is when they specify my first two choices aren't winning, I tell them, what do you pattern your horses against? What type of model do you have? And quite often they say, I don't have a model. I haven't started a model yet. Unless you have a Brohammer model of some kind to check your horses against, you have no idea what's winning at your track. So even with five horses, it's just a matter of guesswork.
How about you, Michael Pozzola in New York? You are one of the social figures at your track. People seem to gyrate towards you and ask you a lot of questions.
Well, I just want to pick up for a second on what Bob said, is that by far the biggest fault is not having a model. And it seems when you see one of these, when you see Tom's book on the model and all the nice, the rows of numbers and ones and twos and the examples in the manuals, it seems like such a formidable task to put one of those together. And I would encourage, the biggest thing, I get all these questions about the models from people who don't keep them. So there's a saying in Italian, poco a poco, si va lontano. Little by little, one goes a long way. Just put the races down as you handicap. There's no need to do 20 or 30 races and get a big model. Just a few races will get you along your way. Then develop your model and then go from there.
Let's stay on the East Coast for a while and get some observations from Reverend Bert Main.
I think probably the same thing that I have heard. I've heard the same thing the other two fellows have heard, that people ask questions and then you find out they haven't been keeping a model. One of the things that of those who have tried to keep a model has come out that they, a couple of times I've been asked by people who want if they're using UltraScan and keeping an UltraScan model, they want their UltraScans to be 1 and 2, and for that to be what wins, which is against the whole point of the thing. They may have, their late pace may always be 1 and 2 winners, but it may be the 3 and 4 or the 2 and 3 in UltraScan, or Ultra Plus Variant or whatever, but they, since the name of the program is UltraScan, they want UltraScan always to be 1 and 2, and they want that to be their model, and that simply negates the entire purpose of the model.
That's an interesting point. Bob Purdy, take up next, because Bob is one of the great champions of, if you're going to use Phase 3, use Phase 3. If you're going to use UltraScan, and they constitute two different types of model, right, Bob?
That's correct. You can't use both programs. I think people who use both programs are just kidding themselves. Because you don't really develop a feel for which one is winning then, and you're playing one against the other in your mind. Your selection process suffers from doing that. So if you're going to play Phase 3, play Phase 3. UltraScan, play UltraScan. An interesting comment, a lot of people know they have a big computer, an IBM, and there are a lot of IBM users around. I've gotten calls from these guys who want their computer to make their model for them, and I think that's getting out of touch with what's happening at your track. You should make your model by hand, sit down and write it out yourself rather than have a computer. You lose touch with what's going on if you have a computer do it for you.
We have programs that make the model on the large computers, and I'm very proud to say very few people have asked for them. Okay.
Well, what I was going to say is the first model I made took about 5 hours because I had to put the races through 3 times. But with the new programs that you have now for making a model, you can do it in about a third of the time. So you can't use the excuse that, well, it takes too much time now. You can do all of it at once now.
Virtually all of our programs, on the handhelds or on the main or things or the desk models, create a model via the CompuGraph, not only in Phase 3, but in UltraScan. Now, Dick Schmidt, as editor of the follow-up, which I hope all of you are subscribing to, has had a lot of letters that he has to answer from people using both UltraScan and Phase 3, so he's had to be pretty conversant with making a model in both, right, Dick?
Absolutely. But as the editor of the Brohammer model, I felt the book was perfect and no further comment is needed. I'm kind of amazed at the number of people who buy the book and either don't keep a model, don't see the value of it, or don't really understand what to put down on the page. We're putting our sort figures down there. The other thing I get is from people who, how do you start one? Well, you start one just by writing down that day's results. And if you only play weekends, what do you do then? Well, you just write down what you got. Half a model is better than no model. And a poor model is better than nothing at all. And so all you can do is kind of put what you've got down. I hate it when I don't have a model. And in putting out the follow-up and writing the seminar book, I haven't been able to handicap much. And I really feel very naked when I go to the track without a model. But I just start one with the first race. I always handicap the first race, even if I don't play it.
They threw him off the track last Wednesday for going naked.
Streaking, wasn't he?
Carol threw him out of the room for the same reason.
That's true. Yes, that's definitely true. But I think all you can do is go with what you have. If you've only got one race for your model, that's your model.
Your point about people not knowing what to put down, that's a question I've had also. The people thought they were putting the numbers down, the feet per second or something, down, rather than the rankings.
And don't worry about trying to make them all fit. I know Tom talks about having in the top 3W, and the top 4 here, and the top there, and top here. My model is a little simpler than that, because I'm a little simpler than he is. I look for one factor where 70-80% of the horses are in the top 2, and I just bet the one factor. If you don't need to have a perfect fit. If early pace is winning, it doesn't matter if the horse is number 6 is staying. Bet your top 2 early. If that's what it takes at your track, go with it.
Before we get to Tom, I'm not going to bring Tom on until the climactic moment, because he's essentially the star of this. So I want to get Ginny Butler brought up a very interesting point in preamble here about people wanting her to supply them with her model. Why should they keep one when she's so accessible? Jenny, what's your comment there?
Well, my model, my first and third horse win the most. My third horse is usually my 3-3-3-2s or 2-2-3, but it's my third horse. And I think that's because of my personality, the way I pick my contention, and the way I pick my pace lines. And I don't believe that you can use anybody else's model because your personality is into that race, and that's what makes you win.
Right, a lot of people get their 4-4-4s are winning because their pace line selection is less sophisticated, but they go with their model until such time as they improve their pace line selection, so they do come out in the ones and twos. Now, before Michael Pozzola will chime in here in a moment, but I want to address something to Tom, because it's quite interesting how some people can misread even as succinct a writer as Brohammer. He should be succinct. They wrote a page a month, a year and a half.
Michael, wake Tom up.
A man came up to me yesterday at the Las Vegas seminar and said that he was winning very well, but of course he was doing as Tom Brohammer told him to do, which meant only could play one or two horses a day and sometimes never. I don't recall Tom Brohammer telling people that was the way to play. I understand he says that is usually the way I play, but you play by your standard, Tom, and now you may make your first glorious comment.
Well, first of all, I want to confirm what you just said, and that is the way I play. In fact, we're in the middle of the afternoon today, and I've made one play here in Las Vegas today. But that's just my own style, and I would never recommend that anyone do the same thing. I would never try to force fit my own style on somebody else. And you can play in volume. That's one of the advantages of doing it. I've got a couple of points that I'd like to make before you take it away from me here.
No, I want to keep it because I want you to review precisely what a model is and how you keep one and how you write it down.
Okay,
because Dick was saying some put it in 55 feet per second of this. Mm-hmm. Just review just casually what it is.
Right now?
Yeah, just that real quickie.
First of all, I make the distinction between two ways to keep the model. One from pre-race figures, which is superior, and one after the fact from the results chart. Let's deal with the pre-race figures. To me, that's the most accurate, meaningful way to keep a model. And what the point of simplicity was made earlier, keep the model simple, and I agree with that. My basic model at any time is to record the figures that I've made for the winner of the race in factor W, early pace, and sustained pace, because that's the basis for the whole methodology. Some of the other things have grown from that, some of the factors that you're using, such as turn time and ultra scan and some of the other things, but it comes right back to the basics, and that is the key, with whether it be ultra scan or factor W, and then the early and late relationships. And what I put in and what you should be putting in is the figure that you generated for that winner prior to the race being run. In other words, if the winner of the race was your number 4 ranked factor W horse, record number 4 in the factor W cell. If it is the number 3 early, record a 3, and if it's a number 2 sustained, record a 2. And do that for the races that you handicap, and then pretty soon you'll develop a pattern from which you develop the model for the racetrack. In other words, if a 3-4-2 is typical for the racetrack, then that's what your model will show. One point before you take it away again, and that is what Dick said about keeping it simple and going for one factor, because I do make that point in that model workbook, that the simpler you make it, if you can get to one factor, then take that one factor. In other words, if your top two in sustained pace win most of your races, go right there. Don't do anything beyond that. When I make the point of the perfect model fit, what I'm trying to say is that if you want to take it beyond volume betting and get it down to one horse, then you've got to be a little more alert as to the early-late relationships on your racetrack. In other words, you may want someone slightly sustained, and if you have two horses that fit, but one's more towards sustained than the other one, then you'll want to go that way. Whatever your model shows you in terms of separating those two horses. But I agree with Dick, it should be very simple, and you should go to one of those factors and bet from that.
Michael Pozzola can chime in now. He's had a point he's wanted to make for a while.
Yeah, no, it was about this, to temper that comment about making the model simple. I agree, it should be as simple as possible. But you have to guard against what Howard has called our cultural tendency always to be number one, to looking out for number one. We see books written about that. And you can tend to want to make your model be one, have a lot of ones in it, when that may not be the right model for you. Keeping a model is a very personal thing. It is, in fact, handicapping your handicapping. So, by all means, have it simple if possible. On the other hand, don't be honest with yourself. If you don't, if you have a two or three factor model and that's what works for your handicapping, well, that's the right model for you.
Did you say historically Dick and Tom will keep probably the simplest but still the most consistent model, that almost invariably there will be one of those three factors that is no worse than a two?
Sure.
Most?
Sure. Most of the time. Depending on how good you are at your game.
The one thing that the model will also do that Tom really never mentioned in the book because I think we just didn't think of it, is it tells you when you shouldn't bet. I keep, let's see, I'm keeping seven, I guess, models, one for each distance and surface at Santa Anita. And I know that throughout this whole meeting, there has not been one time on all seven we're hot, we're working. There's always one distance or something that I just don't understand. I'm not handicapping well, something's going wrong. And I'm seeing threes and fours. So I'm making negative bets on those models. I go ahead and do the handicapping, but I don't make the bet until the model turns around. There are times when I just can't handle sprints. Other times the routes are poor for me. And I think it's as valuable for me to tell me when not to bet as it is to tell me when to bet.
Virginia Butler brought up something here. I'm going to ask Tom about something that we did years ago after we talked to Virginia about this subject, where we lose track of the fact that she remembers the forerunner of the Brohammer model, which was the old line scores. She was referring to a 3-3-3 or a 3-3-X or a 2-2-3. And this would, in essence, be historically our long shot model, and Ginny's handicapping, perhaps reflective of her tracks, gets her a lot of high mutuals with that. You want to comment on it, Jenny?
It sure does. That's my best bet. I love it when I have a 3-3-X or 3-3-2, or I don't use the X's down, but one of the things I would like to say about the model, though, is when you're at the track, take your model to the track with you, and you can keep up with your model as the day goes along. And I was at Portland about 6 weeks ago. The track that was fast and it was frozen, and I didn't know that it was frozen. And some of the guys told me later after the day, but I had noticed that my model had changed. And in eight races on Factor X, that was the only thing I had to work with. The winner was number one five times, and number two twice, and number three one time. It was you just bet the top two on Factor X and you would have seven out of eight just by watching what I was doing at the track. But I like my long shot bets. I get good mutuals. I had a $57 winner here not too long ago.
You opened up a can of worms there, which I suppose we have to confront before we go on. And that is, we have told you that sometimes at your track, at any given track, an esoteric synergistic readout such as Factor X has been revived. Now, Ginny at this seminar in Las Vegas gave a whole presentation on the resurgence of Factor X, and she has written an article for our April edition of The Follow-Up, to which I hope you're all going to subscribe, about the resurgence of Factor X and its importance in the Northwest tracks, which are very wet most of the time, or very off, considerably off much of the time. And Factor X, she found, was a determining factor there, whereas at some other tracks and some distance it's not. So you may have to resurrect some readout that you haven't been using or you haven't heard us talk about much to really form a model. And that brings up a man who has resurrected things that we never even had before, James Bradshaw, for the first time in this session.
Numerous questions are asked me concerning that very issue. What should I keep on my model? Some of the new factors, contra energy, hidden energy, some of the new names that the guru has come up with that isn't mentioned in the Brohammer model book. Said, here I've got hidden energy, they're in the top two, and the top are Factor X or WX, which is on some of the programs, and it has no place to put it on the model. What should I do? I said, if it's winning, put it on the model.
Write yourself a new form.
Draw a new form. Sure.
Draw it up and set it up and put it on the model.
If we get a sufficient commentary, and we're getting it from around the country on the resurgence of Factor S as a predictable thing, it will appear in the advanced phase three, the consummate synergism, which Bob Purdy is putting the final touches on now. So And we will show you how to call up some of these esoteric readouts in your present program.
Yeah, Howard, I think that's after we define synergism for Bob, though.
He's going to define it. It's in the manual, and it'll be in the follow-up next month.
I can, excuse me, Bob, confirm what Ginny says on the West Coast happening on the East Coast. When rains start happening, during a rain and the drying out period of a track, sometimes there is simply no other factor but factor X, or sometimes third fraction at Belmont, for example, which is a very sustained track anyway, which is predictive. You may have a horse with a top factor X or a top third fraction and a fourth or fifth factor W, which normally would not be close enough to winning those times. So it is crucial, if you're going to have changing conditions, that you have your model with you and being an updated race by race.
Yeah, that's a good point. Before Robert chimes in here, I want to talk. We're talking now about two different Rohammer models. One on the pace of being W early and sustained, and then Michael finds sometimes you have to do a model on the individual fractions.
Yeah.
And if that becomes necessary, don't say just because the book doesn't have many examples of that, because if you'll recall, Tom's first efforts in writing about the Brohammer model appeared in Factor Analysis Part 1, and he did have comments. And you should keep those comments, because they're in the second book, the Brohammer model with the blue cover. Winning, first fraction winning, third fraction winning. He's looking at all those things, even though they aren't on the form specifically for the model.
Howard, I don't play major tracks, so I'm not aware of how the model would work at a major track. But at minor tracks, you have to keep a model in fractions.
So yes, we said that in the manual. That at major tracks, the pace summary was the most important thing to keep a model on. At minor tracks, the fractions were. This is because in a minor track, the horse's condition, their form cycle is such that if they can run one good fraction, that may be the difference between winning and losing. Robert, I didn't mean to interrupt your...
Yeah, I just wanted to add to what Michael and Jenny said about the track changing, you know, over a short period of time and then one factor becoming dominant. After opening day at Sportsman's Park, the following day rather, Friday, the top 10 winning all the races, no matter what class. And there was no apparent reason for it except maybe Trifecta Friday. But the track surface was the same. There was no rain or anything. But yet, from one day to the next, the track changed. And if you weren't keeping your model, as she says, while you were there, you would have missed the horses.
Yeah, sometimes it's not necessary to know what's causing this. Whether it's the carting of the race or the surface of the track, the point is it is recording the reality of what's happening, and you're capitalizing on it. Don't try to dig too deep as to tide and winds and horse hoof confirmation or anything as to what's winning it. If it says it's sustained is winning it, you bet sustained. Tom.
And that's how simple it really is, because I've seen some of the most elaborate worksheets that you can imagine, with every factor that you can imagine being on that worksheet. The acid test, I think, that you have to ask yourself is, what does all this record keeping tell me? And that's the first question I ask the users of that type of worksheet. What do you get from this? Well, I don't know, I was hoping you would tell me that, is the answer I will normally get. And the point is that what you're trying to do is you're trying to check two things. You're trying to check reality and you're trying to check your own handicapping. And it's very simple. There is no right way to do this. It's whatever way makes sense so that you can test your handicapping and the racetrack. There's just no right or wrong to this. It's just whatever's logical, whatever tells you something. Another point I want to make before we give it away again, and that is, a lot of the complaints I get are from people saying, I can't make any sense of this. My 4-4-4 is winning. My 5-3-4 is winning. My 5-5-5 is winning. And the point to that is that that's not all bad. And the reason that that's not all bad is that they're your contenders that are winning. And let's define the word contender before we go any further. Because when you call a horse a contender, you're saying that based on the race that you're looking at, that horse can win. So it can't be a huge surprise if your number 5 is winning. And if you're getting a choppy model, a lot of 3s, 4s, and 5s, then maybe it's time to check your handicapping a little bit to see if you can bring that up. But also maybe it's time to bet price within that model structure.
Sometimes that happens when you put too many horses into the computer. Also, it'll distort your readings.
Oh, yes. That's the reason you haven't heard from Jim Bradshaw or Bob Purdy as much as the rest is that Bob is going to go into the model that you will create with his synergism program, and Jimmy is going to come up with a model he is keeping on an experiment we're doing in just in energy. And the model he's created there at Oaklawn Park, which is probably as difficult a track as any in the country, has been absolutely spectacular, but it is based on a specific factor of the model he's made. So they'll come in a little later. Right now I'd like to address something that goes way back to when Daryl Martin and I were first doing this on sheets of paper. We would circle the winner's numbers, and we would only go as high as 3 in 2 of the categories. If they had 2 threes and had something higher than 3, we would mark that. But we would put a gold mark around every 3 that a horse had, where he was third, either in the fractions or in the pace summary, and around a 2 and around a 1. Now, this is something I'd like to throw out to the rest of you to see if you're still finding this as we found. We found that any time a horse had a 1 in any category, regardless of how far away his other numbers were, the horse was dangerous and was a threat, and he should not be overlooked until some further examination. They bit us many times. Tom, you got any?
Well, yeah, and especially if that 1 happens to be on the particular bias of that particular racetrack. In other words, at Santa Anita in a sprint, if you're 1, you may have a 5W and a 5 late, but if your 1 happens to hit the early pace factor, that's very dangerous. At Hollywood Park, if the 1 happens to be on sustained and the other 2 early and factor W are poor, that 1 happens to be very powerful. They're always dangerous, especially when they're on the bias of the racetrack.
With some people who, if they can't make up their mind on that horse, if he has a 1 in any of the 3 major readouts, and the odds are sufficiently high, to put just a little something on that horse as a third bet.
Let me add one piece to that, and that is, this is the time for you, especially phase 3 users, because the UltraScan folks don't have quite the same array. It's time to go back and look at the numbers that generated that 1. In other words, if that number 1 sustained is huge compared to the other 4 contenders, that's especially dangerous. If that number 1 early happens to be a big lead at the second call, it makes it more dangerous again. But that's time to look at the numbers, because conceivably, your top 3 might be separated by 0.04, and then that advantage doesn't exist.
Bob Purdy wants to comment about how important it is to check those numbers, because sometimes they're 0.03 apart, and a horse that's 0.03 away from 2 gets thrown out. And he's
well, in most of the newer phase 3 programs, 0.05 becomes a tie. So your rankings would show a tie.
0.05 or less.
0.05 or less is a tie. So if you may have 2 horses with number 1 factor W, and they could be within 0.05 of each other, your next ranking would be a 3. But it may be within 0.06. We're not talking about a big difference in phase 3 between 0.05 and 0.06. I mean, that's minuscule. So it's very important to check these numbers, not just the rankings themselves. Go back and see what the difference is, particularly if you have a horse that you expected to come out better and he didn't. Comes up 4th. Go see what the difference is between 1st and 4th. You may be talking about 0.1, which is no difference at all, really.
We had a little discussion on that subject here, and I think we won the argument by empiricism. I think Dick Schmidt and Bradshaw were involved in it. When you have a tie, 2 number 1s, it becomes incumbent upon you to make one of those a 2. Don't go from a 1 to a 3. That may be true in stock markets, or in a track meet, if two people tie, they give them each a 1, but you need a 2 in all of your Brohammer readouts. So establish a 2. Don't accept 2 1s and then go to a 3. If you're going to keep 2 1s, make the 3 a 2. Or if you can find a sufficient weight of evidence, make one of the 1s a 2. But don't leave out any 2s or you're going to find yourself in hot water.
I found in Chicago through the research and record keeping that I was doing when I first became a methodology student, that 0.09 was perfect for me in Chicago at the tracks that I played. And I never skip numbers. I always make them consecutive. 1, 2, 3, 4, like that. I never skip over. And I found that 0.09 works out quite well. I use that as my separating point.
Okay, that's an answer to a question that we never dared answer before. But here's a man who's experimented with it, that the distinction between one horse and another is 0.09. Try it and see if that is accurate by your reality.
It's on the 5/8 mile track, right?
Sorry?
It's on Sportsman 5/8 mile.
Yeah.
You answer the questions, Glenn. Glenn, you want to be asking questions here. Glenn Smock needs a place in the sun. How are you keeping your model, Glenn?
I don't keep much of a model with UltraScan, but with Phase 3 I keep average purse value and early energy and factor W, early and sustained.
You're adding two other factors which I recommend to a lot of people. It works for me. Now, it may not work for some people. They may not need it. They may perceive the rankings of early and sustained sufficiently well so they don't need the percentage early. And I know some people who handicap brilliantly without doing an APV on all the horses, but I would be lost without my APV in the ranking because I found, and I'll turn this over to Dick who did a survey on it, in the class, whether you use an APV or even our old class where we included the earnings per start and in the money finishes, he found a very definite corollary between the top four and the winner.
You're allowed to go back a little farther for your pace line if you want with a high average purse.
That's right. That is a key to which pace line you would select, how high the APV is.
I'm just starting to experiment with a class figure derived from the Phase 3, the old Phase 3 manual class figure. And it's still a very experimental one, but I'm finding that I'll have my winner in the top five. I always work on top five, not top four. I'll have the winner in the top five about 93-94% of the time.
So if that figure holds up, that's a little higher than it was, because we only went for the top four when we got about 71%. So if the top five are producing over 90% of the winners, say to yourself, how often do I want to go to a sixth or a seventh?
I've only run about 100 races to it, but I'm going to keep playing with it, and I'll publish the results.
Everybody should keep that at their own tracks. I've got some comment here which Ginny can jump on, and so can Burt Main, Finger Lakes, and Jimmy Bradshaw, Blue Ribbon Downs. They said, well, that Brahma model may work real well at a major track, but at our little tracks, you've heard the story, la-di-da-di-da, but at my track is different. It's, you know, that's the great old rationalization for losing. Yeah, but my track is different. Well, Bert, how about Finger Lakes?
Finger Lakes is right in there. A lot of people think because it is cheap, that cheaper horses, I should say, and smaller purses, that, you know, somehow this won't work. Well, one day, there was one day last summer, and again, it was one of those things someone asked me later, why did this happen? I have no idea in the world why this happened, but sustained pace took 8 out of 9 races. And I was right there because I had a model. And that makes you feel almost omniscient. The next day, I played the sustained pace horse in the first race and got killed and said, wait, just a moment, let's just see how this is holding. And it didn't hold at all. And it hadn't held the day before that for one day, for whatever reason, that held. And you can get a marvelous amount of insight into the track, whether it's a cheap track or a classy track or whatever. I love Finger Lakes because a lot of people think that it's rather unplayable, and I think they approach it, even people who maybe pretty conversant with horses and with racing, kind of approach it maybe a little more as a gamble than they would the major circuit. They have this, there's so many authors have said, you know, you have the stability of the major track and all this kind of malarkey. So people, well, I'll play $10 on this. I'll put, you know, $5 on that. Well, if you keep a model, the place becomes a beautiful, what is it, Jim calls an outdoor bank, I guess.
Well, the smaller tracks do vacillate more, but the vacillation is more noticeable. And that's the payoff. Sure. And I can tell you, I love Ginny's track. It changes in the middle of the day. We were doing a seminar in Yakima, and it was running early, and then suddenly a deluge came. And we looked out, and we looked at the surface of the ground, and we knew within 20 minutes that it, and so we started in the seminar before we went to the track handicapping sustain. And Ginny will tell you the rest of that day.
It was quite an interesting day. Howard and Jim hit every race that they handicapped, and they did it at the track in about 2 minutes because of the seminar. They didn't have much time, and also our group had the trifecta that day, and it was a ride. The reason that I think that people have a hard time at Yakima with its $800 purses is they have too many built-in prejudices. And I hear people at Portland say, I can go to Yakima and win, but I lose here because my races are fixed. I hear people at Yakima say, I can go to Portland and win, but I lose here. The races are fixed. But if you keep a model, you can win at any track.
You'll see that there's no fixing because if they're fixing it, they're fixing it to conform to the Brohammer model, because the model, if you keep it on a race-to-race basis at those kinds of tracks where weather is subject to immediate change, it bears it out.
Most of the fixes are people's prejudices.
We had a fix. We had a fix at Yakima.
Yeah.
We had a trainer at our session who said, who was going to buzz his horse. And he said, watch, I'm going to buzz this son of a gun. He's going to go out and put blinkers on him. He's going to go out and take the lead, and he's never going to look back. Well, if they turned the track around, that horse would have won, because he came in dead last. And he figured to come in dead last. So the fix that is in the mind of the trainer or somebody who thinks he's got a fix in is...
Yeah, but the funny part of that, Howard, is after the race is over, Howard says, what happened? And he says, I sold the horse for $250.
Yeah, he was mad. He was going to shoot it.
And he really did sell it for $250.
Those two horses, it was running sustained, and we bet the two, it was a trifecta race, so we bet the two sustained with the best sprinter, which up there was the early speed. Well, that sprinter was scratched, so we put in the second best sprinter with the two best sustained riders, and bang, 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 and came in 1, 2, 3. Tom?
Well, I'm going to get a little change of subject here, because Michael and I were chatting a little earlier. I'm going to have Michael cover the point. But we're talking, a lot of the questions we get are, do I live and die with what I did before the race? In other words, if I threw the winner out of my basic contention, do I then put X's in my model or what? Or do I re-handicap the race? I think I'd like to have Michael cover that.
Yeah, it's the question I get asked the most when I get asked about the model, is what to do. But you have to handle it carefully, because if you find you're doing this too many times, go back to basics. You're eliminating too many horses, or you're picking too many incorrect pace lines. But it does happen sometimes that you may pick a pace line and not notice that it was on an off track, or a track with a huge racing form variant, or some reason that you notice after the fact that you shouldn't have taken the pace line for the horse that you did. What I would suggest is you go back and you redo the race, re-handicap the race using what you now think is the correct pace line, and see what the model would be given that correction. Similarly, if you eliminate a horse and the horse wins, well, go back, see why you eliminated, see why that may not have been the correct thing to do, and pick a representative pace line for that eliminated horse and see how he ranks, see where his see where he fits into the model, and use those rankings for your model. Again, with the caveat that if you find you're doing this too many times, then stop. Go back to basics and work on selecting contenders and pace lines.
Very good. Robert?
Yeah, I just wanted to add to what Michael said. I think the Brohammer model of some kind is the fastest way for you to find out what your deficiencies are, if you have any.
Bingo.
The turf race, Fritz, I was at the track with Dick, and I had my hand calculator on. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm looking for the horse of all the contenders in the race with the best third fraction. And then I want to take the top five best third fractions, because I know that they're going to be, and then the horses I'm going to put into the computer.
Friday at Sportsman's, you would have made a fortune doing just that.
So if you know that's what's winning, why go through all the rigmarole of putting them into computers? Find the contenders from what's winning, unless you want it exactly, then look at the best first. Just before Michael takes over, I want to talk about the Bob Rigo syndrome. Bob Rigo is a good friend of all of ours, and a fine client, and he was playing a pick three at Santa Anita. And he was well on his way to having the pick three, and he had a horse that the only thing you recommended was that it was the counter-energy horse in a turf race. And since you're playing several horses, you want to take into all contingencies. It was number one early, which is counter to the turf models. And he had it in his selection, and the way he plays, if a horse is number one in anything, he will put it into those exotics, pick six, or the pick three, or the pick four, they have some track. And this time he left it out, and he lost $12,500 as a result. And he normally put those counter energies in along with the ones that were the Brohammer model, which brings us to the fact that there are the counter model, which Jimmy has been working on very heavily, and we might ease into the concept of the counter model and how it frequently, when the track's going to turn around or things are going to change, or when the energy level of the early pace goes diverse to what it's been doing, the counter energy horse then suddenly takes over and not only displaces but will win. Jimmy, you want to comment on that and let the others pick up on it? Because that's been your baby now for a year.
Since November, I have been working on nothing except energy. And use the counter energy, early energy, and total energy. Been working on different programs and looking at this, and through discussion with Howard numerous times, we've established quite a few new concepts concerning energy, that sometimes this counter energy horse does win, and there is a reason for this. And I had Michael Pizzola making a model from the races that he was working today at Hialeah, Laurel, Aqueduct, and Santa Anita. And through this, he could determine how this particular race would run, going to run, whether it was a counter energy horse had a chance to win, or whether it would be as the Santa Anita, the 53s, etc. On Oaklawn Park is a very, very difficult track for the main reason that these horses are coming in from all over the United States. And if you don't think that the percentage of early energy affects a horse, check their pace lines. Sometimes that you can even get rid of horses. If they're in a race and most of the horses are 51s and 52s, and this horse's total energy from, percentage early is in the 50s, this is a slow horse. Get rid of the horse. So many times after they have been over the track.
You say in the 50s, you mean between 50 and 51. I just want to stress that. When the others are 52 and 53, this is under 52, you're calling it 50 to 51 being the 50s, not anything in the
50s. So after they've been over the track and a profile can be established, then you can see horses that are in the 54s percent early are 2% energy of Oaklawn. So with the use of an energy model, total energy percent early, you can establish pace line selection. You can establish whether the race needs to be adjusted or not. And both the counter energy and the win energy for your particular track and this particular race.
Jimmy's put into the Las Vegas seminar workbook, the augmented version of which will be available to everybody as soon as we insert the contributions of James Quinn and Huey Maul. He's put in several races which are fantastic in this regard, in that every conventional readout points to horse A, let's say. But one readout, which Jimmy labels win bias, points to the other horse, and lo and behold, the horse with that one standout readout and it wins the race. And that's all it's got going for it. That's isolating win bias, and that's what this program does. And what synergism does for phase three people, ironically.
That's right. What Jimmy has been talking about solved a very long-standing problem I had with the model. For example, the most consistent track I've ever played with a Rohammer model was Belmont, where sustained pace is king, is dominant. But every once in a while, there would be a race won by the top early horse. And it was just a very puzzling thing because I never knew when that would happen.